720 WGN. John Landecker welcoming Dr. Allison Ardoy, Commissioner of the Chicago Department of Public Health. Welcome to WGN. Thank you for taking time. I know you've got a very busy day going on.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
The press conference earlier today with the mayor talking about contact tracing. Can you give us the information we need on that?
Sure. So we were really excited to announce today, in partnership with the Chicago Cook Workforce Partnership, 31 community-based organizations from high economic hardship areas in Chicago that will be hiring contact tracers from Chicago and specifically working to push jobs into these areas where they're most needed. It's an earn-as-you-learn program. People are not required to have any particular training in contact tracing, but it's really a goal to build up some capacity in community and make our current contact tracing program even stronger. So it was an exciting day.
How does it work? How does this contact tracing work?
Yeah, so the way it works is that every single case of COVID-19 that we receive in a Chicago resident right now, and moving forward, no matter where folks live in the city, we do case investigation and contact tracing. We reach out, we have a conversation with people, get information, and then make sure that we're getting them the resources that they need. And then in a way that protects their privacy, we're able to share with others if there are things they need to do, like get tested. And basically what this will help us do is move some of that off of the Chicago Department of Public Health and really into community. And so it's a way for us to think long term beyond COVID, really build up some opportunity for folks to be a contact tracing core, public health voices in neighborhood, and importantly, build jobs at this time.
I believe we have a question. Go ahead.
Dr. Arwady, this is Kim Gordon in the newsroom. I'm going to just switch subjects on you for just a second. You guys released a new study today talking about youth cigarette use in Chicago, and it appears cigarette use is down, but vaping is still on the rise. Obviously that's not surprising, but in a way it is surprising because there's been so much talk about the dangers of vaping and the vaping disease.
Yes, that's right. So, I thanks for bringing that up. Certainly, we have been encouraged. I think that we have been a leader in a lot of ways here in Chicago around really youth protection related to tobacco. But the problem is vaping came right in and took over a lot of that progress that we've made generally against youth smoking and youth tobacco use. And so, you know, just earlier this week, City Council made a decision to not allow flavored vaping products. We're happy to see that. We're hoping to double down on that even more and think about other flavored products that, you know, including in combustibles that really appeal to youth. We don't want to get another generation addicted to nicotine if we can help it.
And the other thing that was surprising to me was the use among young black males.
That's right. So unfortunately, we already know that 2 years of the life expectancy gap, the racial life expectancy gap in Chicago, where white Chicagoans live almost 9 years longer than black Chicagoans, 2 years of that gap can be linked to tobacco use. And so we also know that there's been a long history, unfortunately, of flavors targeting especially black Americans, particularly with menthol. But even with other flavors. And the fact that we are now seeing some increase in terms of smoking in young black men is not something that we want to see, and one of the reasons why we really want to think comprehensively about keeping flavors broadly away from younger people, which is, you know, we know that flavors are one of the big things that get kids started.
Is it hard for you to... Oh, sorry, John.
Go ahead, Kim.
I was just going to say, is it hard for you to get the message out now to these kids since they're not in school? So how do you, you know, teach them that this is not what they should be doing?
Yeah, it's hard, you know. I think so much of this is, frankly, what they see their peers doing and even what they see adults doing. Some of the major progress that we've made, I think, is, you know, a number of years ago here in Chicago, for example, we said you can't sell flavored products within 500 feet of high schools, period, right? Like, you can't sell menthol cigarettes. You can't sell flavored vaping products. You can't sell flavors. That's the kind of thing, really getting it potentially further away, making it harder for kids to access some of this. And then it's just changing norms. I think where people start to understand the dangers that do come with vaping as well, and kids, you know, we're able to hopefully turn that around in the future, we can put out, and we will continue to put out messaging around the dangers of particularly youth smoking and vaping, but we don't just do that through school. So it gives us one fewer place to do it there, but broadly, I think more just thinking about all the different levers that we have to keep this less likely for kids to initiate use of these products is important.
Yeah, I remember when the flavored tobacco came out, the industry was accused of specifically doing that to try to attract a youth consumer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we've seen. You've got products. They're you know, bubble gum and gummy bear. Like, who do you think those products are aimed at, right?
Exactly.
But we really think that all flavored products broadly, this is what brings kids in. And we really, out in California just the other week, they actually outlawed all flavors in all tobacco products, period. Combustibles, vaping, the whole thing. Increasingly, we're seeing really, you know, cities and states pushing back against the tobacco industry. And so I really, you know, we've taken some steps here. I'm really hopeful that we'll continue to get even more serious and get back out in front here as we really work on this. You know, it's one of the main things that kills people. It's the preventable number one leading preventable cause of death and disability here in Chicago and around the U.S. And I know people, you know, use it for stress relief. They use it because socially, historically, it's been something that folks have used, but it's dangerous and it kills people, and it doesn't kill people equally. So it's a major conversation, and I encourage people to check out the new information online if you want to see more details.
The Contact Tracing Corps, we started a few minutes ago. You are looking to fill 400 jobs, if I got that correct?
Yeah, even more. It's going to be closer to 500 by the time you include both the contact tracers and the supervisors. Then there's even another 100 more that will be doing some of the resource coordination. I want to be clear that they're going to be hired by the community-based organizations. These 31 community-based organizations are receiving funding, and then in turn will sort of be doing the training. People can go to chitracing.org or chitracing.com if they want to learn more about it, or put in their name, you know, to be able to get some more information or potentially apply.
Wow. That's a bonus right there. So if some people are unemployed, here's an opportunity to rectify that situation. Thank you so much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Have a good night. That's Dr. Allison Hardaway, Commissioner of the Chicago Department of Public Health. And we're following up with her on the press conference that was held earlier today with Mayor Lightfoot. John Landecker at 720 WGN. Coming up after the top of the hour, he worked for Sports Illustrated. He writes for the Sun-Times. He's Rick Tellender. But we'll have some announcements here, and then we'll get to Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.